Thank you for joining us here, Foster Brown. Gary Baker with me in studio. Gary, good to have you here.
Hey, it's great to be here, of course.
Mr. Eddie Riddell, our tech expert as well. Good to have you too.
My favorite thing to do on a Saturday.
Especially a cold Saturday.
That's right. Great time indoors here. Yes. Hey, folks, this second hour of the program is where we take on the questions that you've sent us during the week. Weeks that we are not on live on our flagship station, WJR, in Detroit because of sports events that are going on at the same time as our program would normally be on.
Those big green guys, right?
And push us right out.
Green Michigan State Spartan uniforms. They're certainly doing real well this year.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I'm going to let them push me out because I'm not wearing padding today.
Well, we've got the guys without the padding and the basketball uniforms that will be doing the same thing to us. The key thing is you can keep on asking questions, and you do that by going to internetadvisor.net. Go to the Contact Us button and send us your questions. We have a whole bunch of them that you've been sending us this week. And by the way, you're listening to us on our affiliates? That's a great thing to do for whether you're in, let's say, Lansing or you're in Muskegon.
Yep.
Grand Rapids,
Kalamazoo, or anywhere else in the state that you happen to hear us. Please go to internetadvisor.net and go to the Contact Us button and put your question in there. We've got some great people like Ed, who's been solving people's computer programs problems for years and years and years, and Gary, and maybe even I'll put a word in, and Cal Carson, for those of you who have mechs, he's there to help us as well. Hey, but before we do that, this last week was a really busy one for you, Gary. Starting Sunday night, you were involved in a huge cyber summit that was going on
at
Cobo Hall.
North American International Cyber Summit. It has happened over the last couple of years as the Michigan Cyber Summit. And we really had, it's turned into a North American and international. In fact, we had...
Kind of like the auto show, right?
We had General Vannay Skyped in from Latvia, where our Michigan National Guard is training the Latvian army in cyber espionage and anti-cyber espionage.
Wow.
And because there's been that interaction between the two, and he happened to be there, couldn't make the summit, so he Skyped in. That was pretty cool.
Brigadier General Mike Stone was with us from Michigan National Guard the other week talking about that.
That's right. And I met General Cardone there, and who is in charge of the U.S. Military Cyber Command.
Wow.
But you know what? I will tell you that Michigan, because of our governor, Governor Rick Snyder, Michigan is in the forefront of, you know, thinking about and actually doing something about cyber warfare, really. Yeah. And it really is. It's about how the bad guys, you know, if we're not protecting ourselves, can come in and attack us in innumerable ways.
Did you see
this
statement by Leon Panetta?
I didn't see it.
It was on. He just made a statement, I think, a day or so ago, essentially saying that the U.S. is here. It was a couple days ago. He was out saying that U.S. Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta delivered a strong warnings about the risks of cyber attacks on the country. His conviction that a possible cyber Pearl Harbor may be looming has not tempered since his leaving his post last year. In other words, he said essentially, all those control systems we talked about, the SCADA systems,
that's right.
Our power, our lights, our sewage systems, water, everything.
Yeah, the power grid is the most important, right?
And they're ripe for attack.
Well, unfortunately, you know, we protect them as well as we can, but you're not going to protect. There's no way you can keep the bad guys out of every place.
And what they're saying is that will be the next volley and the next war will be fired on that level.
And General, retired General Mike Hayden, who had come on, he was the director of the CIA during the Stuxnet virus episode, and he had been on with us a couple years ago. His partner, Mike Chertoff, was at the summit this last week, and he was the retired Secretary of Homeland Security.
Mm.
These guys are now...
What a gathering of eagles.
Oh, it was wonderful, because these guys really know. You know, you hear a lot of pundits on TV and on the radio, like us.
Yes, talking heads.
And we talk, but we don't know, and the people that know don't really do the talking.
Right? That's right.
But they did on Monday, and it was very interesting we're doing.
I say, what one thing did you come away with that really an impression that stuck with you from the whole thing? Because there are so many things happening.
There's a lot more cyber espionage attempts than I ever thought was going on.
That are happening right now.
Just the Michigan alone, we're repelling, state governments repelling, 500,000, a million tries a day.
A day, easily.
A day.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I found fascinating, I was listening to a podcast last weekend while I was up north at the hunting cabin with my brothers, and it was talking about how if you walk the streets in Russia, you can buy magazines that will provide you the line code on how to do the hacking. I mean, these magazines are not sold in the United States.
Mm-mm.
And they're basically training the individuals that this is what you do. And they can get jobs. It's the black market over there. And it's just not Russia. I'm not picking on
No.
Many places, as long as they're hacking outside the country, it's fine. But if they start hacking inside the country, that's when the Russian law enforcement will get on them, because it's okay if you go outside the country.
Oh, I see what you
don't do it internal. You don't go after that bread maker across the street or on the other side of the country. Their laws are not set up that way.
So we are doing a lot, and we have to. And we have to continue. And it's going to be hard to stay in front of the bad guys. And so it's not only how to keep them out, but what to do once they get in. Because
absolutely,
it's going to happen. We just don't know where.
But,
folks, when.
We've had this international summit here of cyber awareness. And that, to me, is a great comfort. We'll be back in just a second. We'll start talking about some of the questions that you've sent us this week and see if we can get you some answers as well on the Internet Advisor. Thank you, folks, for allowing us to be in your lives through our podcast. And for those who are listening to us through our affiliate system, thank you very much for being part of this as well. Second hour of our program, we tackle problems that you have sent us. And when we're live on WJR, our flagship station in Detroit, we get to take your calls directly. But at times like this, when we're pre-recorded, because we are preempted on that station, we open up to our emails and start talking about the people who have sent us questions during the week. So you say, how can I get my question in there? Very easily. Simply go to internetadvisor.net, click on the Contact Us button, pour your heart out, leave us the information there with your email address and phone number. We get back to you just as soon as we can and solve those problems. And guys, here's a problem that came in just today, as a matter of fact, from Al. And here's his question. I said, I bought an Apple TV this week, and it looks good on my HD TV, but trying to watch TV shows is impossible because of all the starts and stops from buffering. If you've ever had this happen, it's just crazy.
Right.
How do I overcome this? What do you think? You know what that's like? If you ever watch Netflix, and I have a good connection, it's that, spinning dial that's on the screen. It's almost like the old beach ball of death on a Mac.
Right. As soon as 7 o'clock hits, you could forget about streaming. It depends where you are in the neighborhood.
Well, let's talk about that, because for a lot of people, I think streaming is kind of magic. Well, I just tap into the stream, and it all kind of comes in until suddenly it doesn't, and you start getting this thing called buffering. What is buffering, Ed?
Well, I mean, there's six different things you can look at, and I'll look at five of them.
Okay.
I'm making this up as I go.
I hear you.
No. The first thing I think of is, and if I really want to drag this in there, is are they having I was going to say net neutrality.
No, right? We won't go there quite yet.
We're not going to go there yet? Okay.
Not yet.
Because that could definitely impact this, and this is what people would see.
Yes.
As an example for Netflix, or if you could,
Maybe just to say this, there was one concept that says that not all packets of information are created equal.
Right.
That some should be given more priority over others, which would be not net neutrality. Or some people say all packets should be equal, all information should be channeled at the same time. Let's save that conversation for a little bit later.
Let's assume it's something with the in the house somehow.
Yeah.
So either their internet service provider, maybe they're using DSL. Right?
No, that's
they're not
it,
using their cable.
Right.
And at which point that is definitely a slower speed.
So if you will, it's a garden hose coming in instead of a fire hose with DSL.
Well,
and you also have other people. Is on a DSL line you have more impact from other users?
No, not exactly the opposite. You don't.
You have
a dedicated amount of bandwidth. Unfortunately, with Comcast and cable technology, you do have a big pipe coming into your neighborhood. But depending on how many people use it, it's shared.
Okay, so that's
the opposite. It's shared from the neighborhood collection point back to the head end.
Okay.
So if you have all of your neighbors are streaming at the same time,
So at a certain time of day, yeah.
You're going to use more bandwidth,
exactly.
Right? And it's going to have problems coming down the pipe to your neighborhood.
So
right.
Roughly right. From when people get home from work, like from, like, say, about 6 o'clock in the evening until about midnight, everybody is sucking on that pipe.
And the so weekends are even worse.
Yeah, so there's a couple things you can do. If
okay.
If you want, you can download instead of stream. So you download at different times, set it up to download at night, download during the day when people are at work.
Now, does Apple TV allow you to do that?
And then just play it, right?
See, no, Apple TV is no, strictly streaming.
Streaming
yeah,
only.
So
you
if,
can't
so
do
you
it.
Bought the wrong
TiVo,
technology.
Yeah. On yes. TiVo, you could yeah. do that, yeah.
So the technology I have, I can do that, and that's what I'd like to do.
Do you have TiVo?
So I don't. What we do is I just take and run it onto my computer and store it on my hard drive.
Okay.
Right? So, in a folder
but
on the hard drive.
The point is you will not
and
be able to watch...
I use Roku to do that.
Okay. But right? you, the point is you won't be able to watch TV like you did in the old days where it's same time.
Right? Well, you can.
You can, but you get the buffering issues.
Potentially, you'll get buffering issues depending on how much bandwidth is being used
okay,
for other things.
Okay, so issue one is the bandwidth that's coming into your house.
Right.
Right.
The other thing is are you wired or wireless? How do you have your Apple device connected? Is it
yes.
hardwired directly to your internet service provider's cable modem or DSL modem, or right. are you wireless and possibly getting interference from your neighbors, as we discussed earlier in the show? So I would always use hardwire because, I mean, I have a wireless device that I've used for streaming, and it doesn't get the best signal sometimes, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's gotten to the point where I've had to move my the wireless router to a different location right. in the basement right. so that I get a stronger signal and I can stream to this device.
Okay.
Because it doesn't have the ability to hardwire.
Okay, so wired or wireless can be an issue. So there's the issue of the signal strength that's coming into the house.
Yep.
You're getting the best stream coming in. And the other thing then would be,
any
are you wired or wireless?
Any interference in
any
the house.
Any interference in the house.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, I've known people that, depending on the type of paint they've used
yep.
in
really?
The house, and that can affect it.
Really?
Some people
How?
That... Some people,
well,
and the type
older,
of windows.
The older lead paint, for instance.
Yeah, the old lead paint will infect it if you're in
no.
a much older
and you paint
home.
Over it,
and
maybe,
the building
but it's
materials.
Still there, right?
Yep, the building materials in your walls. Some people have the metal studs.
Oh, yes.
Yep, some people have
goodness,
the wood studs.
Yes.
Yep, right? And I've known people that had e-glass put in their house because their house is, their windows face west, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they put the e-glass in there.
Yep.
And it, that just takes those Wi-Fi signals and bounces them around like a BB in a cage.
Yep.
No
it's just,
kidding.
Yep.
That's fascinating.
Nobody ever thought of that when you were, you know, 15 years ago.
So that's
nobody
for the
had
wireless.
Wireless. Who cared,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, I think one of the other things, too, is kind of a mindset we have that I'm going to be watching TV the same way I watched it when I used it to go over and turn the set on and I was getting it over the air.
Well, you do the exact, I mean, we're in the exact same place that television was in the 1945 to 50. Right?
Right, rabbit ears. I mean, you got
where you yeah. had you had all sorts of interference and sometimes you didn't get it and you were, you know, you felt lucky to get a really good clear signal.
Oh, that's a good point.
Right?
A lot of people were investing in those tall towers they put in their house or maybe
yeah.
put a roof antenna on to get that better
to
signal.
To get better signal. You could do maybe something like that. But eventually, right, we're going to have enough cable bandwidth that this will people will just be able to stream over their iPhone, right?
But
their,
it's becoming, we're kind of in the in-between time, I think, right now.
Right.
Between the time when people have gotten an appetite for streaming.
Yes.
For instance, if they got their smartphones.
So you mean there's a demand, and then supply will have to catch up.
Exactly.
It was very hard to go build supply without the demand. So
yeah.
now the demand's there, so now they've, you know, we've
yeah.
got to fill in with the supply.
Yeah.
And we'll talk in the next segment about net neutrality. Net neutrality could very easily, if we make bad decisions and pass bad laws, could get in the way of all that investment.
Oh, right.
And that's what we got to be
so many
of.
Issues involved in that, Ed.
And the other thing, possibly like you did, Foster, look at upgrading your wireless modem.
Excellent.
If you have a 2 or even a 5-year-old wireless infrastructure in your house.
Yep.
You might want to look at upgrading it at this point, especially during this this holiday break. You're going to see some great prices.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Foster, what was the unit that you got that actually got a superb rating?
Rick Broida had suggested the TP-Link. That's Thomas Peter, TP-Link.
I thought TP stood for something else.
No, wait,
okay.
On Halloween, yes. But other than that, it's a TP-Link. I had not heard of the brand, but boy, CNET gives some rip-roaring reviews. Matter of fact, they had a whole article that said the best... cheapest modems out there, And I looked at the reviews and everything else, and these things get incredible reviews. I bought one of the lesser ones, depending on how big a house you have and how far you have to put your signal. You may want a little bit bigger, stronger. But these things are running. I bought mine for $50, and suddenly at Newegg, they were on sale for $40. So this time of year is a great time. Ed, you're right. And the key thing there, Ed, for instance, is that I have two different channels now. I can use a 2.5 gigahertz, or I can use a 5 gigahertz. And then, Gary, you were pointing out that even within those channels...
They're channels.
Pardon me, even within those bands,
bandwidths,
there are channels that you can go to as well.
Because you might get your home phone, wireless home phone, puts out a signal. There are other things in your home that puts out signals, and if they happen to be on the same channel, just switch to a different channel. You get a better connectivity.
I just realized.
You have to go into the administrative settings and figure that out.
I have a new wireless phone that's sitting right next to my wireless modem. Well, I better check that out.
Check it out.
And the fifth thing that I was going to mention is go to speedtest.net.
Oh, good idea.
Which is to find out what actual connection, what's your speed going to the internet right now?
Excellent. Speedtest.net.
Okay, don't go to the .com. It's bad now.
Speedtest.net. We'll come back. We'll reiterate that in just a moment and get to our next question. Once again, thanks for being with us here. And by the way, thanks to the crew behind the glass. Andy Nichols, our lady of the phone, who's back there. Thank you so much, Andy, for helping us out. Ed Mikestad, thank you for your engineering duties there. Appreciate you guys for making this program possible for us. Again, if you have a question for us, the great thing to do for us is simply go to internetadvisor.net and hit the Contact Us button, put your email address in there and your name, and then describe your problem, and we're on the way to solving that. Ed, just before the break, and I want to make sure people get this, one of the ways that you can find out what kind of quality input you're getting, your signal, is to go to something called speedtest.net.
Correct.
Just quickly tell them what that does.
Well, it basically will test the speed between your computer and someplace, say, in central Chicago, as an example. Right. It provides a graphical interface so that you can select geographically different regions in the United States and between your computer and those regions. Now, when I click on it, it shows me taking off from Detroit. But when I'm wireless sometimes and I'm using my MiFi device or even on my cell phone, sometimes it shows me, you know, kicking out from Ann Arbor or something like that and going to Chicago. And it basically gives you a throughput and it'll give you a rating, you know, how many megabytes per, you know.
And it's a way, by the way, of checking up on your provider to make sure they're giving you the good deal.
Yes.
Another way, by the way, for folks who live in the country, there was another site you were going to suggest to that people would go to in order to be able to find out what would be the best provider for them. I know some of you listen to us in rural areas, even around major metropolitan areas, and you got a difficulty with the signal. There's a place you can go that the government has that will show you where the better signals are.
Yeah, we had a listener, Peter sent us a thing. He's, I'm in a rural area, and, you know, what site can I go to? And I used to go to, and I believe, Gary, it was like DSL Reports was one of the websites that we went to. And they do provide some information, but it can be difficult to navigate through.
Yeah,
but you can get through it. And some of the information was outdated, like that internet provider isn't there anymore. Well, I found another one. It's called broadbandmap.gov. And apparently it's a .gov
broadband
website. Yep, map.
Map.
I got to watch the P's, right?
Yep.
A broadband map.
.gov.
And it provides a nice graphical interface and a way to for you to locate. You could type in your zip code, your home address, maybe just your city and state, and it'll provide you, try these internet service providers for your area. And, you know, I did local and it told me that Comcast and Charter were available for me. Well, only Charter is available for me. Mm-hmm. But when I went up north, I found, you know, there's a couple wireless internet providers up there that, like you've described as well, that provide the rooftop antenna areas. Mm-hmm. That might be an option for a lot of rural areas.
So it shows you that the options you have, especially you folks who live in rural areas or places where you're on a margin, you can check out. There may be resources available that you weren't even aware of. That's it. So it's a great thing. It's called broadbandmap.gov, and we will list that, by the way, on our homepage. Now, we were able to get in touch with one of the folks who wrote into us this week, and we have him with us in our program right now. And that's Roland. Roland, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Roland.
It's actually Roland.
Hey, Roland, how you doing, sir?
Just fine.
I got the name right now. Okay, Roland, you sent us a question about a problem you have whenever you start up your computer. You get a pop-up box with a program that's trying to install itself, and it's pretty nasty persistent.
Yes.
Can you provide us any more details on that? Because I believe I responded to you, and because I wasn't, you know, sometimes emails don't come across properly, where you may or may not provide enough information. Can you describe what's happening?
Okay, the box popped up, and it tries to load a program, and it says it can't do it because it needs to be, a CD has to be installed to get the program.
Right.
But I don't have the CD that has the program. I even tried some of my local discs, just maybe it's something I missed somewhere along the line.
Yeah, is there anything in the box itself that might give you a hint? Does it just...
What is the program?
Well, yeah, does it provide the program name, or does it provide the file name?
Has the name is Status, STATUS. Mm. And then it asked me to find the spot to load it from.
Okay. Sometimes those dialog boxes, when they pop up, provide you the ability to browse. And if they let you browse, sometimes when you hit the browse or explore, you know, I'd have to see the dialog box to be for sure, but they give you the option, and when you hit that box, it'll provide you a file name that it's looking for. Sometimes it's something like MSI, something like Microsoft.MSI or Microsoft or Setup.MSI.
It does do that. The name's Status.MSI.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Oh, that's right. You did include that in the email.
Yeah.
And that's what one of the things you could do is, well, I see, I'm not sure what's...
My concern is this, Roland, pardon me, that you said that this thing, even though you say cancel, keeps coming back and back and back, right?
Right. Yes.
Now, that activity to me says, that is very suspicious. And I'm going to guess that what you've got there is a virus that is trying to install itself in your computer.
Well, not necessarily. So... A lot of times when you have a program that starts up, every time your computer does, if it's damaged, it will then say that this program's damaged, we need to reinstall it. Mm-hmm. And this is particularly true. I just did a quick test, and Roland, I'm sorry I didn't think of this before because you did provide the file name. Hewlett-Packard provides has a program called Status, and they actually have a file name called status.msi. Oh. So if you have a printer that is a HP printer, and
yes.
And if the printer is somehow the printer software on your computer has become damaged, you may need to reload that printer software because HP, the status monitor, and in particularly the inkjet or the thing that monitors the inkjet.
Oh, that's
software,
the status.
It might need to be reinstalled. So have you got the printer software that originally shipped with your HP printer?
Yeah, I can get it. I don't have it available right now, but I can
certainly...
You could also maybe find it online going to HP, right?
Exactly, yeah. You could download...
That's a good clue, because I didn't know it was an HP product.
I didn't think of it until talking with you. Sometimes just talking to people just brings up whole... opens up whole new avenues of conversation and thought processes that when I read the email, I'm like, oh, man. And I was going the same way Foster was. This is malicious software.
Boy, I'm glad you said that, Ed. You know, I just Googled here, too, status.msi download, and I got some interesting answers there, like how to repair Windows Installer, status MSI, Windows XP. Mm. What operating system do you have, by the way? What operating system are you using, Roland?
XP.
Well, this is an article that's right there. It says, how to repair Windows Installer, status.msi, Windows XP. This speaks exactly to what you're talking about, and it's from geekstogo.com. Now, the point is that you can Google for those things, and there are some repair solutions out there. Now, I would suggest this, and for you and for other people who are listening, when you find solutions, and Ed, we've talked about this before, check a number of them. Don't get the first one right, Gary, that you see.
That's right.
Because it may not be the right one. The other thing, too, is...
My SearchPal, right? And you went and said, oh, how do you uninstall it? Well, you went to mysearchpal.com and went, oh, no, if they didn't get you with the first time, they're going to get you the second time trying to uninstall it.
So. Then there's another one that says, resolving MSI startup errors, and it's from HP support.
Yes.
Ed, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Okay, so the other thing, and this is... one of the things I believe I wrote to you in your email is you can use a Microsoft utility called msconfig, msconfig, which will allow you to selectively choose what programs you wish to start up with Windows. And so you select start and run, or you can select the start search and type in msconfig. CONFIG. And when you press the OK button, it'll bring up a Microsoft hidden utility called Microsoft Configuration, or MS Config. And there has a startup tab at the top. When you select the startup tab, you'll see a list of all these different programs that start up. A lot of them are very good programs, like right. your Adobe Flash Player, your Java software for web browsing. Both of those are web browsing software, but also your Hewlett Packard Ink monitors and network discovering tools. You know, all sorts of tools. Your antivirus software's in there. So what one of those utilities might be calling up and have a failure, and that's why it's saying, please install the CD that you use to install this program so that we can find the status.msi. And how do you identify which one of those are? Well, we suspect it might be the Hewlett Packard, but one of the things you can do is you can bring up this MS Config utility, and you can you can deselect them all, as an example, make note of them, because, I mean, of which ones, there's, say if there's 15 items, possibly all 15 items are selected. So deselect them all, shut down, reboot your computer. If that status goes away asking for MSI, you know one of those utilities that you deselected is the culprit.
And by the way,
damaged one.
Roland, the thing, you don't worry about deselecting them and then restarting, because the ones you need will start up again. The ones you don't need right away will not. Now, can you hang on just a second?
Oh, yes.
So we can wrap up this conversation with you. We'll be back in just a moment to continue our conversation with Roland, asking about a status.msi file that just bugging the daylights out of him. We'll answer some more questions as well here on the Internet Advisor, hour number two. Thank you for staying with us. Thank you very much for listening to us here on the Internet Advisor on our podcast. And for those of you listening to us over our affiliates, thanks for joining us. Glad to have you with us. Roland has been with us, and we've been talking with him down in Monroe, Michigan, about some problems that he's been having with his computer. Hey, Roland, I'm just curious. What made you decide to post your question?
Well, I've been dealing with this for several weeks, and just trying to figure out an answer. And I haven't come up with a solution. I thought... You guys, I've always listened to you on the radio. I enjoy listening to you, and figured you might have an answer for me.
I'm delighted that we could talk with you as well this week and help you to see if you can wrangle with this. Okay, so you had a problem of something called status coming up and wanting to be installed, and then you kept on getting an error that says put in the install medium, which meant like USB or a disk or something like that. We determined that that status is actually a file that's a good one, and it comes from HP.
It may be,
and it looks like it probably is one that comes from HP, the printer company.
Correct.
That it has to do with the status of your printer, and it might be the inks in it and whatever else it might be. Something got damaged. It got damaged, and it's trying to install itself, and it keeps on fussing at you to do it. Ed, you went through one with going with MS Config. Any thoughts to wrap this up for him?
Yeah, two. Okay, the other thing is that I described how to go into MS Config and deselect all the objects. Now, how do you identify which one of those might be related to the status.msi? Is you randomly start, or you methodically, step by step, start adding those devices backing in and then rebooting your computer. And then seeing if, and then making note which program you selected, and then the error message comes back.
Okay.
And I mean, that might take 12 reboots. But here's the cautionary note. If you have a damaged file on your computer, because now you're being prompted to reload this software, you have a Windows XP computer. That hard drive is very old, and it's quite possible the reason why you're being prompted is because you're experiencing disk drive errors now. And your hard drive could be failing, or the Windows file system could be failing. So the first thing I would do is if you have a means of backing up your data, start backing it up.
Yes. Do you do that, Roland?
I do online.
Okay. Back it up wherever you can. Back up. That's the first thing. And then you can do almost anything you want with your computer.
Right.
Ed, you brought up a very good point. For a lot of our folks out there, I know you folks are using XP, have been. You're using older machines. I've got one, for instance, my wife is using, which was running Windows 8.1 now, but it's been around for a while. And as a matter of fact, I'm thinking of replacing the hard drive in it with a solid state.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's good deals out there right now.
Have you ever run a check disk on your computer to check for disk errors?
I'm sorry?
Have you ever used a utility to check your disk drive for errors?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So how you do that, and I want to spend a few moments to do this. You go into My Computer, and okay. and you select your C drive. And then okay. you right mouse click on the C drive and you select properties.
Right.
And then once you've selected the properties, the, you'll have a window that pops up and it'll have a tools tab at the top, general and then tools. You want to select the tools tab. And when you do that, it'll, you know, check your disk drive for errors and you want to select that box to check your disk drive for errors. And when you do, it's going to, and you select the okay button, it's going to say something along the lines, I'm sorry, I can't run. I can't check your disk drive for errors right now because you're currently running Windows. Would you like to schedule that for the next time you reboot your computer? You select yes. And then you, at that point, you select OK. You close that window, reboot your computer. Windows starts will come up and you'll see a black Windows, what looks like a DOS window, and it'll start checking your disk drive for errors. And then hopefully, if it finds any, it'll repair them as well.
Right, exactly.
If you start seeing a lot of errors, or if it takes a really long time, yeah, you might have a failing hard drive.
So the an alternative you would have at that point, Roland, would be look for a good deal, and there's some great deals right now going on a computer, period, or on a hard drive. And you might want to go the way I am, which is to look for a solid-state drive. So, Roland, thank you very much for calling us and asking these questions. Hey, and let us know by email how things turn out, okay?
Thank you very much for your
help. All right. Happy holidays to you, Roland. Thanks so much for giving us a call.
And that's a really, Roland said that he contacted us because he had a problem. That's a really good reason to contact us.
Yes, exactly. We love it. And by the way, we took a little time to answer that, a little more time, because there's a number of issues in there.
That's right.
That we touched
and
on.
And hopefully, when we answer a question, it helps a lot of other
that's
people as well.
That's what we try to do. Anything else that struck you this week in our questions that you'd like to grapple with?
Well, we had one person that called that basically said that I have to say that while let me read their email. That was my response. We have a Windows HP Vista computer. The main functions are for email, paying bills, and playing some HP WildTangent software. No real heavy work. The HP WildTangent games are supposed to be Internet Explorer, which has updated to Internet Explorer 10. Now I can no longer play my games. And so then I replied to her. Basically, they use the computer only for a few things. Yep. But if you recall, WildTangent is one of those pieces of software that's pre-installed by manufacturers, mm-hmm. and it's for the enjoyment of the customers, and you get a certain amount of time, but at some point, you have to pay for additional or longer than the,
right.
I don't know what the introductory offer is.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, too, is they're running Vista, and one of the things the email went on to say is that since she upgraded to Internet Explorer 10, it's telling her that she has to upgrade her drivers, and they're not available in Vista. So an alternative would be to downgrade the Internet Explorer.
And how would she do that?
She would simply uninstall it, I think.
Right.
And then it will give her the option of going back and reinstalling the one that works with Vista.
It'll automatically come back up in 9.
I think it'll come back in Windows 9.
Now, 9 is not a great... So I would probably go back to 8.
Yes, I would say if you can go back to Internet Explorer 8.
If you don't want to have 10, then I'd go back to 8. 9 is okay, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of problems with it. And they just skipped it quickly and brought 10 out quickly because of the problems in 9.
Some of the things I think to keep in mind is, folks, a lot of you are hanging on to older software on older machines. I understand why. You know, I do the same thing for as long as we can. However, you do reach a certain point of no return, like with Vista, for instance,
right.
where as you're moving up with some of the software that comes on, it's going to be gobbling up more space, or it will simply say, we don't have the drivers for this anymore.
And mm-hmm. it's gotten so cheap, you might as well upgrade the hardware as well as the software. Because to go out and buy, you know, say a Windows 7 and spend $100 just to get an operating system, spend $150, get a whole upgrade, right?
Yeah,
you have hardware and everything.
You have things that are out nowadays. By the way, I live on Social Security, okay? So I don't have boodles of money myself. And making my purchase decisions is very, very careful. I don't have a credit card. And I have to live on the cash that I have. So I understand your situation. And I'm not blithely suggesting that you spend a ton of money. But if you've got a little bit of money put aside, now is a great time mm-hmm. to make that purchase. And you can do things like getting refurbished computers at places, if you're in the Detroit metropolitan area, a refurbished at The computer store on 14 and
Micro Center.
Micro Center.
And I was just looking at some of the deals. They are some incredible deals out there.
Our friend Shane, who has his own little computer shop, you can go to that in Sterling Heights. We have a link on our homepage called Our Favorite Computer Shops right at the bottom. Click on that. You'll find a whole bunch of local computer shops that you folks have recommended.
Yeah.
Go there.
Some of those we haven't vetted, so we're not recommending.
But the listeners have.
Other people have
recommended and
them.
We put those in. The point is this, that this is a great time of year to take the little money you have and invest it wisely. It may push you into a machine that is like Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, like the one we talked about today. A great deal. HP has put out this 11-inch laptop called the HP Stream 11 for $199.
Amazing.
$200. You have got an incredible machine for email, for surfing the net, and for doing some basic documents.
Yep, and it'll be portable.
And it's portable. It's a great thing. So we're not blithely telling you to spend a lot of money, but this is a great time of year to make the step up into a brand new computer and save yourself a whole lot of grief and really start enjoying your use of the internet. Well, I'm Foster Brown. Gary Baker, thank you for being here.
My pleasure, as
always. Ed Rudell, good having you here in house.
I love my job.
And the next time around, we'll have the whole crew here with Mr. Cal Carson talking about Apple devices as well. Make sure you check out our homepage at internetadvisor.net for the show notes, which we'll be posting on Sunday night afterwards. And you can also download the podcast anytime you want from that site. Hey, have a great holiday weekend.